This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
We have the lowest proportion of elected representatives to residents anywhere in Europe, and this is going to make it even worse. And I think, you know, people are disillusioned already. I think the disillusionment in the unitaries is potentially going to be even bigger.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast, your go-to source for insightful discussions on local and national political matters. Join us as we take a deep dive into local government across the county. Find out what the key decision makers have to say, what your money is being spent on, and how the party's policies could affect how we live. Plus, don't miss our regular feature, Westminster Watch, where we dissect the latest developments and decisions shaping the political landscape in the heart of the UK's capital. Engage with us as we delve into the issues that matter to you and explore the dynamic world of politics from a Kent perspective.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast. In the week where Reform took control of Kent County Council with a stunning election win, which saw the ruling Tory group and was wiped out, residents spoke out about a parking permit woes affecting them in Medway, and all's not well for Labour with a major falling out at Dover District Council. I'm Dan Essen, the local democracy reporter covering Kent's district and borough councils. There's no Simon Finlay this week, but I am still joined by Robert Boddy, who reports on Medway Council.
Hello.
And Nikki White, who's been keeping an eye on what goes on at Westminster.
Hello.
Later on, we're also going to be joined by the now former Kent County Councillor for Swale West, Mike Baldock, who lost his seat to Reform, like many did in last week's elections. First up, though, Rob, what have you been looking at in Medway this week?
I've been on a bit of a stint of finding gaps in council systems this week. The first was a woman with a blue badge and exemption for the school street where her daughter goes to school. School streets, listeners will know, are where automatic number plate recognition cameras find people who drive down certain streets around the letting in and letting out hours of schools to try and improve pedestrian safety. Some people can get exemptions for the scheme, and this woman had one on account of her blue badge. Unfortunately, the car she normally used was in an accident, and while it was being repaired, she received a courtesy car. She contacted Medway Council ahead of time to apply her exemption to the temporary car, and Medway Council said that was all fine, except she quickly started receiving fines for illegally entering the school street. In total, she received 18 fines, and despite contacting the council each time and the council saying that they were issued incorrectly and would be cancelled, she kept receiving follow-up notices, including a court order.
And that's not the only grey area causing problems for Medway residents, is it?
No. In Mill Road in Gillingham, a resident applied for a parking permit for her daughter, but the council said she didn't live within a controlled parking zone and so couldn't have one. When she told the council she had been issued one, and had previously successfully argued that she did live in the CPZ back in 2021, the council said she shouldn't have been given a permit back then and made hers void. The council maintained she didn't live in a CPZ, despite the fact that there were signs across the road from her house saying that she does, and people being issued fines there regularly.
So what's happened with these problems? Are Medway Council going to be forced to row back?
Thankfully, in both instances, after we asked questions about these issues to the council, the authority acknowledged they had made errors and they cancelled the fines from the school streets and now say the homes in Mill Road are eligible for a parking permit after all. Dan, what have you been looking at?
So all this actually happened last week, but obviously it was kind of lost in the mix of the KCC election, so I still thought it worth talking about. Basically, I've been watching the Labour group at Dover District Council fall apart and imperil their own control over the council.
How have they managed that?
So it may not surprise you to hear that it's all basically because of factional conflicts inside the Labour Party. They took control of Dover District Council in 2023 with a very slim majority after about 20 years in opposition. Then in March this year, there were two defections, one to the Tories and one became independent. And then just last week, the deputy leader of the council, Councillor Jamie Pout, was fully kicked out of the Labour Party after a disciplinary investigation. And within a couple of days, two more councillors had resigned in solidarity with him and became independents.
How's it factional? What was the disciplinary investigation about?
Basically, the party found that Councillor Pout ran an anonymous Twitter account which supported left-wing and non-Labour candidates publicly, which is obviously a violation of Labour rules, violation of the rules of every party to openly support other candidates. He claims that it was the Labour MP for Dover, Mike Tapp, who made the initial report which led to this investigation, an allegation which Mike Tapp hasn't responded to despite my trying. However, it is beyond dispute that Mr. Tapp provided evidence of some sort to the investigation. Even more confusingly, there's a woman locally who's an ex-Labour member who's claimed both to me and to the Labour Party's legal and governance unit who ran the investigation that the Twitter account is in fact hers and nothing to do with Councillor Pout, which Councillor Pout says, you know, he also says that's the case. But Labour's disciplined people clearly, you know, don't buy that and they booted him nonetheless. Mike Tapp, the MP, is widely regarded to be well on the right of the Labour Party, so to a lot of people locally, this looks like a pretty straightforward factional knife fight.
Are Labour going to lose the council now?
Probably not, but it could get quite difficult for them to govern. They now have only 12 seats out of 32 and are governing as a minority. And the Tories could be gearing up for a vote of no confidence at the council's AGM later this month. The Tory leader of the Tory opposition has called on the Labour leader of the council to step down. But council leaders and chairs are technically appointed for a four-year term unless they lose a vote of no confidence. And the new set of ex-Labour independents at Dover District Council very much respect Labour leader Kevin Mills, their problems with the National Party. And they told me they don't have an appetite to hand control over to the Tories, but they're now pretty much the kingmakers. Nikki, what's been keeping our MPs busy this week?
Well, it's been a mixed bag this week for the county's MPs as they get their heads around the new regime at KCC, who they'll need to work closely with, while balancing their recognition of the 80th anniversary of VE Day and the commemorations that are going with that. However, one thing that many of them have been highlighting is this week's news that the UK and India have finally agreed a trade deal to make it cheaper and easier to buy and sell goods and services between the two. The British government said the deal was the biggest and most economically significant trade agreement the UK had signed since leaving the European Union in 2020, and it's hoped it will benefit the economies of both countries. Now, ministers reckon the agreement will add £4.8 billion a year to our economy by 2040. It's expected customers in India will see dramatic reductions in the prices of things such as Scotch whisky, cars and other exports from Britain, while in return, we've agreed to either cut or abolish tariffs on Indian imports such as textiles, clothing and shoes, and some foods such as frozen prawns, which should mean lower prices in our shops. The deal also includes an agreement where Indian workers coming to the UK and also UK workers going to India, they won't have to pay social security contributions for the first 3 years. However, that part of the deal has been criticised by the Tories as a two-tier tax system, and Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch said it was one of the reasons why she'd refused to sign it. She said she also felt that the number of visa requests were too high and our ceramics and aluminium industries would be screwed. Now, Britain had 17 similar agreements with countries including the US, EU and Japan, but with US President Donald Trump's recent headlines about trade tariffs he wanted to bring in between the US and the rest of the world, it's a subject that's high on a lot of people's radar at the moment. Also, this deal has taken quite some time to get over the line, with more than a dozen rounds of talks involving successive governments taking place since 2022. With India being predicted to become the world's third largest economy, it was an important deal to strike, but some aren't happy with the terms, especially after the rise in employer national insurance this year.
And what have Kent's MPs had to say about this deal, if anything?
Well, Tris Osborne, he's the Labour MP for Chatham and Aylesford. He said that we were now placed to trade with one of the fastest emerging market economies on the planet, while Mike Tapp, who represents Dover and Deal, as you know, said the Tories had offered visas and failed to get a deal, and then Labour had delivered one without compromising on control. Sojan Joseph, he's the MP for Ashford, he said it was very positive news.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
So dust is just about settling on last week's Reform UK landslide at Kent County Council, and the new top dogs are so busy that none of them could make it to speak to us today. We're expecting to know who their new leader is probably by the time this podcast is out, but in the meantime, we're joined by an unfortunate victim of their success. Mike Baldock still represents Borden and Grove Park on Swale Borough Council, but last week he lost his county council seat, Swale West, to Reform UK. Mike, thanks very much for joining us. How are you?
I'm good.
You sort of recovered from a very busy election and count day?
Yeah, I mean, it always takes it out of you, win or lose. The weekend after an election is just sort of like a zonk out. Yeah, it takes a few days to recover.
So you've been a member of County Council for the Swale Independents for quite a while, and also on the Swale Borough Council. Did last week's results come as a shock to you, both in your own ward and across the county?
No, I think from the second week it was clear, talking not just to people in my area, but in pubs and places across Sittingbourne, certainly, but this was going to be massive. People are not interested in politics. They're just saying, yeah, we're going to vote, support reform, got to have change. That's why I was surprised the turnout didn't drastically increase, because I think a lot of people who haven't voted before, voted for a long time or might only vote in general elections, turned out and voted. But where did the people who'd, you know, normally vote but don't vote reform go? If they stay, well, they must have stayed at home.
So obviously, you're an independent politician, but even you, yeah, sort of the whole claim of the distinction of independent politicians is often their independence from and difference to an existing political establishment and all the parties. But do you think that even for you, approaching voters as an independent politician, you still got the vibe from basic men on the street, essentially, that that you know, nobody trusted any politicians and reformers where they would go if that was what they wanted to express.
It was basically a reform effectively turned into a national referendum on Starmer, and just the one single policy has stopped the boats. We know free word slogans work in the modern age, and that's what they hit on. And all I got was people really moaning about Starmer, winter fuel allowance, and local issues just went out the window. It was all national anti-Starmer, stop the boats.
Do you think that's a, you know, do you think that's a bad thing overall that people are voting on basically national issues, or do you think it's good that you know, it's obviously engaged people, even if they're not necessarily voting on, you know, the efficiency of their waste disposal and social care?
No, I think fundamental principle of Swale independence and independent candidates is that you fight an election on what that election's about, what you can deliver, what you can do. And I think it's dreadful when national politics overshadow local politics, because give Starmer a kicking doesn't work when you've only got five councillors on KCC. Yeah, they're not a relevant body on KCC. So how are you giving Starmer a kicking? It was, you know, other than on a national scale. So, yeah, I think it's a shame when national politics wash over local politics, because local politics, for their own reasons, are just as bit as important as national politics. They will affect your lives day in, day out. They never get the same sort of attention.
Obviously, losing your seat was always, if you know, is always a difficult thing to go through. Was it particularly painful for the fact that you lost your seat to Richard Palmer, who up until relatively recently was a member of your Swale Independence group?
I think he fought a campaign that the other candidates didn't. You know, he did write leaflets and deliver them, whereas seems that most of the others relied on letters from Farage. Yeah, I mean, he's learned a lot from me about campaigning and used my own tactics and skills against me.
So something else you share with Richard Palmer, as well as formerly being Swale Independent, is formerly having been a UKIP member. But yeah, so it's obviously your politics are sort of loose, at the very least, in the same neighbourhood. But yeah, why did you never make the jump from UKIP to, say, what was the Brexit Party and what's now Reform UK?
I think there's a big difference, actually, between UKIP and Reform UK in their policies. UKIP was a more democratic party. It had evolved, and we had a lot of good local policies, many and a lot of fairly good national policies. They just put immigration in every other line, but a lot of the policies were actually quite good. I don't think Nigel supported them, but because it was a democratic party, we prevented it going down the extreme, well, not extreme, but the hard economic right route. And I think that's why he set Reform up in the way he did, so that couldn't happen again. And why lead a party that isn't going to do what you want it to do? So I think the Reform Party economic policies were a lot less about service than UKIP's were. And that's why I didn't join them. You know, I had a meeting. I asked what your policies about special needs transport. You know, they said they wouldn't put council tax up. So I said, if you don't put council tax up, you'll have a bigger spending gap. What are you going to do about community wardens? And it was clear that they didn't really have a lot of policies. They didn't know. I'm not going to join a party whose policies, A, don't really seem to be very existent, and B, those that were, I don't agree with. That is crazy. You don't join a party if you're not sure you are comfortable with the majority of their policies.
We're still in early days at the moment. We're not even sure who, at the moment, who the Reform leader of KCC will be, not to mention sort of what actual policies they're going to implement. But what do you make of their sort of the priorities that they've talked about so far in terms of the sort of American Department of Government efficiency style cuts to roles such as diversity, climate change, and that sort of thing? Do you think that's actually something they can do? And will it work to sort of help KCC?
Well, in the first place, I hope it doesn't cost more to do the exercise than the exercise saves. There are members of Reform, mostly didn't get re-elected, who would have had the opportunity to do this whilst they were at KCC anyway. I doubt, or it's a good thing to look for efficiencies, and I think there were savings that could be made with different priorities. Whether or not they're the priorities that Reform are interested in, I don't know. But you can always, you know, move budgets around. But I don't think we're going to find a huge amount of savings, in the sense that this is stuff that shouldn't be done. This is a waste of money. Because it's all, KCC has already been pared to the bone as much as the Conservatives thought it should be. Yeah, they can make savings in things like getting rid of community wardens. I'll save them money. It's not very good. They can save money by tightening the definitions of people who qualify for transport from home or for special needs. But again, I don't think those are good policies. And I don't think it's really waste to ensure that kids get a good education. You know, there's a difference between what's statutory and what's optional. And if they go down the route of just sticking to what's statutory, then a lot of people will suffer.
You said yourself that, you know, a lot of the reason people voted reform, or maybe almost the entire reason in a lot of cases, was basically to stick it to the national government. There's a, you know, a referendum on Keir Starmer. But now, you know, up and down the country, reform party politicians are in power and responsible for the provision of services that millions of people rely on in a way that they haven't had until now. Yeah, that's not always good for anti-establishment parties. So it's obviously, it will depend on the circumstances, but you don't seem very faithful that they'll fix KCC like they promise. So do you think the next few years of running Kent County Council and others up and down the country might actually end up being quite a bad thing for reform? Do you think in 2029 they could end up having to take responsibility for a lot of really unpopular stuff?
Yes. I think actually I said that to a reporter on at the Count. May the 3rd could be the start of the end for reform. I do wonder if that was National Labour's policy. You know, give them enough rope and destroy them, because they will have to serve a full four-year term potentially before the next general election has to be called. That's a very difficult period of time to remain populist and anti-establishment when you're the ones cutting bus services, failing to fill piles. Unless they somehow get a grip on all the things everybody moans about, they're just going to look no different to everybody else. And that's not the image that will carry them, I don't think, to a crushing victory at the next general election they're banking on. They may prove me wrong.
Yeah, obviously your party is an explicitly regional and an independent one, the swell independence lies. What would you have liked KCC to look like? Yeah, would you have, obviously, you know, your party wasn't standing people in a majority of the county. You know, having swell independence in charge of KCC would kind of be like having an Plaid Cymru prime minister. So what would you have preferred that the election to happen?
Well, I was hoping that we'd have four swale independents and a couple of independents elsewhere in the county. Ashford independents, one of them came quite close, but they weren't as strong as I might have hoped. And the Tunbridge Wells independents seemed to be having trouble. But yeah, I'd hoped for a hung council where no one party had overall control and that therefore policies had to be discussed more openly. You couldn't have one party ramming everything through. They'd have to talk to other groups, and in a position like that, even one vote could make, or on an issue could make difference between it going through a committee or not. So I think that would have been a lot more democratic, and that's what I was hoping for, a totally hung council.
This could, you know, likely be the very last election for KCC because of the local government reorganisation, which the government is sort of working through. What do you make of these plans to abolish KCC and replace it with either three or four unitaries? We're not exactly sure at this point. And do you have any sort of preference about the geography of those new councils?
I think the proposals are bloody awful. I think they're undemocratic. They take away the relationship between councillor and resident and take away community identity, because in a borough council a village might have just one councillor representing it, or it might share a council with another village. On these unitaries, it's going to be many villages, many communities, but all represented by a single councillor, and I think that's undemocratic. I think that the sense of place is difficult when you have such a large and varied group of group of areas making up a council. I see it might work in the big cities where you've got good public transport. There is a sense of Bristol. There's a sense of Manchester. There's a sense of London. There isn't a sense of Mid-Kent. There isn't a sense of North-West Kent by the Thames or something. And I think that, I think it's basically about taking away representation of the voice of the people. We have the lowest proportion of elected representatives to residents anywhere in Europe, and this is going to make it even worse. And I think, people are disillusioned already. I think the disillusionment in the unitaries is potentially going to be even bigger.
So lastly, you know, obviously you still hold a seat on Swaleborough Council, and yeah. You know, you say you're critical of the plans for local government reorganisation, but one way or another, it's going to happen. So when Kent is split asunder,
well, this is interesting now, because I kind of gather, when it's hard to get a real steer, but Reform don't seem that keen on devolution. I think some of the councils went along with it, feeling it was inevitable. If the county council isn't pro devolution, it could take longer. And in which case, does it happen?
You think Reform might not play ball with a view to sort of obstructing
possibly.
It?
Possibly. Yeah, it would be at least one minor good thing to come from them winning, is if they manage to delay devolution until a new government cancels it.
Well, working on the assumption that it will happen, whenever some new authority absorbs the area around Sittingbourne and Borden, do you reckon we can expect to see you standing for election to that authority in future?
I am umming and ahhing about it. I think it depends on the nature of the constituencies. If our mega constituencies electing three people, say, you know, there's the whole of Sittingbourne is one constituency electing three members, it makes it easier to get elected, but you're totally losing community identity there. I'd probably say I'm about 65% likely to stand.
Interesting.
Well, it also depend on who we were thrown in with and whether or not we could get independent groups already active or activised in the rest of the unitary area.
Well, it'll be one to watch for definite. Mike Baldock, thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure.
So it was a stunning victory for Reform last week, which took even some members of that party by surprise. But they did it, winning 57 out of 81 seats on KCC to win a solid majority. And they now face an opposition of only 12 Liberal Democrats, 5 Tories, 5 Greens, and merely 2 members of the Labour Party. I predicted on this podcast last week and the week before, I think, that the Reform would be the largest party but wouldn't win an outright majority and take straight up control. So obviously I was wrong and I'm quite surprised. What about you two? Rob, are you surprised by the result of the election overall?
I think I was quite surprised, yeah. I think I thought that Reform would obviously do well, but I thought the Tories might be saved by the fact that, you know, Labour are in government at the moment, so Labour would take the majority of the hitting. But obviously that wasn't the case, as we saw loads of key Conservative figures on KCC lose their seats.
Nikki, what did you make of the results? Were you shocked by them?
Yeah, a little. I mean, I wasn't surprised they did well. I think we all knew that they were going to. I thought the Lib Dems would do slightly better than they did. I thought if people were going to go out and make a protest vote, then the Lib Dems was the way that they were going to go to. But yeah, I thought Reform would probably end up in control, but not by this landslide. I mean, that seeing the numbers tumble in on Friday morning was something I just really didn't expect to see.
Yeah, by sort of 1-2 in the afternoon, everybody started preparing for the fact it looked like they're going to win. And then I think by about 3, it was there's no dispute that we're going to take a clear majority. But like Rob says, it's important to point out that there were quite a lot of very big figures who got the boot quite unceremoniously. So former leader of the council, Roger Gough, in Sevenoaks, a rural seat near Sevenoaks, lost it. Former leader, Paul Carter. Long-time leader of Dartford Council, Jeremy Kite, is gone. And leader of Gresham's Tory group, Jordan Mead. Every single one of those lost their seats, which is bad enough to lose, but even more so when some of your most recognisable figures also get the chop. Now, obviously, Reform are in control of the council. A lot of members who've got no political experience before. So they basically have to decide how they're going to run it. And the first matter for that is choosing a leader. By the time you're listening to this, the leader of the Reform Group and hence leader of the County Council will probably be known to all of you, but we're recording this before we know that. I wrote last Friday that the knives are probably out pretty much by halfway through that day, and it certainly seems it. As it stands as of writing this, the frontrunners of to be the possible leader are Lyndon Kemkeran of Maidstone South East, Maxine Fothergill of Sevenoaks Rural North, and David Wimble down on the Romney Marsh. But obviously, this will be only the start of the politics of a new Reform administration, a lot of new people trying to get along with each other. Rob, how do you think the sort of interpersonal politics of a new and unexperienced Reform leadership at KCC might play out?
Well, I think, firstly, opposition parties, I mean, something that Medway's Labour have been saying a lot is really highlighting the fact that Reform have no experience in this area, that the majority of these councillors who have now been elected have never held any sort of position before. So I think you'll see that being really highlighted, particularly by opposition parties, but who want Reform to sort of, who want to stop the flood of Reform. But I think with that, it can be debated whether it's a good or bad thing. The lack of sort of, for inverted commas, a professional party atmosphere. Are these new councillors going to be as cautious as, say, Labour politicians are or Tory politicians are about basically taking chunks out of one another when they do something that they don't like? reform, you know, trades on its, you know, it's an authentic party with real people in it. You know, will the public put up with that if all of a sudden it just seems like they're fighting with each other all the time, if that's what it amounts to?
Yeah, I feel like with all the existing parties, because obviously they've been around for so long, there's a very well-established sort of schema for what their conflict looks like. You know that, you know, any opportunity inside the Labour Party, people on the left and right are going to be pointing guns at each other. And that as soon as you turn your eyes away, people in the Tory party are fighting like ferrets in a sack. But reform, yeah, with the primary issue being immigration and being an extremely personalistic party around basically Nigel Farage himself, there's no well-established idea of what the factional divisions in reform are. So maybe somewhere like Kent could end up being a sort of testing ground for the splits in the party and see if there's anything which holds them together at all other than immigration. But Nikki, what do you make of them? Do you think they'll fall into chaos in the next week, or do you think they have a bit longer?
I think it's probably going to be a bit clunky in the first few days, but that's typical of anything new that launches. You know, and as we said in the podcast last week, they are not a party of record. It will be the first time that a lot of them have come together, and although a lot of them have some good experience to bring to the organisation and to the council, working together en masse, and as we've now discovered, very largely en masse, there's a lot of them now to bring together and to work towards a party message. So I think there's probably going to be a few clunky bits in the first few days, few weeks, but they're going to be wanting to make a big impact. I mean, they need to ride on that wave. They've come in, they've all guns blazing, and they've won all those seats and making all those headlines, and they need to ride on that success and show the people of Kent who voted for them that, you know, this is what you've put us in for, and we're going to deliver. Whether that actually happens or not, it remains to be seen. I'm sure the council meetings that that Simon's going to be attending in the next few months are going to be quite interesting.
Yeah, but so both before and after the election over the weekend, there've been a lot of headlines of supposed reform policy announcements. One which caught a lot of attention was supposed plans to ban the flying of any flag which isn't the national flag of the UK, the Union Jack, which would presumably impede councils in displaying their historic county flags. And another thing they've made a big deal of is DOGE, as in Department of Government Efficiency, American style cuts to spending. They say they want to abolish jobs related to diversity, equality and inclusion and climate change, and essentially, you know, also force people to come into the office now that councils have been adapted to working from home since the pandemic. So I guess one of the other big things they'll face is, are they financially or even legally capable of implementing a lot of the changes they say they are? Rob, do you reckon they'll give it a crack, or will it all fall apart quickly?
I think it's a lot more, as many things are, a lot more complicated than possibly they're making out. There are obviously the sort of legal requirements, as you say, about sort of diversity and stuff. A lot of that is about making sure that people aren't discriminated against, which I think the vast majority of people are fine with. It's just when it becomes something a bit more, which is what reform really sells itself on. In terms of DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, I mean, KCC is in a very difficult position, and we've spoken with many KCC politicians who basically say there's not much more left to cut. So again, reform may be a victim of its own success in the sense of, because they've got this big majority, they are the largest party, they are in complete control of KCC. If they don't do what they say they're going to do, they don't have the excuse of, oh, well, yeah, we won a lot of seats, but we didn't, you know, we weren't in control, we couldn't do what we wanted to do. They are in control. What they do now is entirely up to them. And so if the public don't like it, then the reform may suffer as a result.
I mean, people are going to want to see change, and change quickly. The people of Kent have voted. They've voted for drastic change. Something needs to happen. I'm hoping that reform have got something up their sleeve fairly fast. And I hope they do find some savings and some cuts and things that can change and make things for the better. Because, you know, not everything is great in this county, as much as we all love it. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
I guess from Western Europe to developing countries, anti-establishment parties have a way of falling apart very, very quickly when they get into power and have to take responsibility for things. So I guess we'll see in Kent if that ends up being reform's fate. All right, folks, that's your lot for this week. Thanks to Rob and Nikki for your contributions, as always. And don't forget to keep an eye on Kent Online for the latest politics coverage in the county. And you can also sign up to our politics briefing newsletter for the latest news, views and gossip at kentonline.co.uk/newsletters. Also, don't miss KMTV's politics show every Friday at 5 p.m. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KMTV every Friday at 5 p.m. or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.